Ladies and gentlemen, it's 7 p.m. in Dubai, 3 p.m. in Lisbon, 11 a.m. in St. Kitts. Welcome to a new episode of the Mobility Standard, the podcast where we dissect current events, trends, and crucial questions related to investment migration. I'm your host, Christian Nesem, editor of Investment Migration Insider. In this episode, I had the pleasure of talking to Andrew Henderson, the founder of Nomad Capitalist, who's both a good friend and an inspiration to me because of his incredible business acumen, especially when you consider his young age. Andrew and I spoke about his upbringing in Ohio, starting a business in his early 20s, and his becoming disillusioned over the erosion of freedoms and confiscatory levels of taxation in the U.S. Andrew discussed the communication errors he thinks many investment migration practitioners are committing and how it affects their relations with the powers that be. We talked about what he thinks are the reasons he has a social media following that's an order of magnitude greater than any other brand in RCBI. I asked Andrew why he rejects the vast majority of prospective clients and why he thinks free consultations are not helpful for industry practitioners or clients. We also explored what personal characteristics he shares and does not share with Donald Trump. We also discussed why he maintains permanent homes in 6 different countries on 3 different continents, why he picked those destinations to begin with, and where he's looking at for his next home. All of that and a great deal more in today's episode of the Mobility Standard. If you'd like to meet Andrew in person, you'll have a chance to do just that on November 2nd and 3rd during our upcoming IMI Connect Istanbul event. To learn more about how to get an invitation, go to imidaily.com and visit our events section. Look for IMI Connect Istanbul. I'd like to remind you that you can follow all of IMI's stories on our website, imidaily.com, on our mobile phone apps, in our free newsletters, as well as on your favorite social media network. You can also follow this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and most other podcast platforms. With the preambles out of the way, let's get this show on the road. Andrew Henderson, thank you so much for taking the time to come see me here in my office.
This has to be, by the way, the largest mug I've ever seen, or that anyone's ever. It says, "I am the boss."
That's right.
And it says it twice, by the way, just in case you didn't know.
So I got this just from my wife as a reminder that I am, in fact, the boss.
You like that?
I love it. I love the acknowledgement.
I think this is going to be probably the most controversial podcast in the history of IMI podcast, but I'm glad to be with you.
Hope you're right, Andrew. Hope you're right. This is why I brought you on.
Buckle in.
Yeah. All right. We always start this podcast by having the guest tell a little bit about themselves. But since you're famous already, we don't need to have the introduction. So what I would like is kind of a quick recap of Andrew Henderson, where he's from, his origin story, and how he came to run Nomad Capitalist.
Yeah, so I founded Nomad Capitalist about 10 years ago, and it was following growing up in the United States. I grew up in the Midwest. We talked about that, kind of our shared Norwegian roots.
Right.
So I grew up in Ohio, and I was fortunate enough to have a father and a family who saw the writing on the wall of some of what's attracting a lot of business to this industry today, which is the decline of the West. We've seen a lot of that interest, you know, percolating the last 2.5 years from people realizing that things are getting worse in the West. Freedoms are down, taxes are up, it's only going to get worse. But we were talking about that back in the mid-1990s. And so what he told me was, you know, don't feel that you're compelled to stay in one place. Because I think most people, we realized, felt compelled to stay in the same place. Like, that's what you do. It's your family here. You can't leave. You know, we're all trying to get out, but we can't, right? And so he said, listen, you should just go where you're treated best. And that stuck with me. And so I eventually moved as an adult. I lived in Arizona in the U.S. And I dropped out of college. I started businesses, did a bunch of different things, sold some of them, did pretty well. And all the while, I was paying all this tax in the U.S. And I just never felt comfortable, quite frankly, in the U.S. I think that's one pillar of our industry, right, that allows people who just maybe feel like they weren't born in the right place, right? That they can fix that and they have an opportunity. And I think people deserve that.
Kind of like people who say that they're born in the wrong body.
Or I love the movie, was it Midnight in Paris, where they were like born in the wrong generation.
Right.
And then you realize, by the way, that like the people in that, the Bell Epic era, like they wanted to be from a different era. But
it's the golden age fallacy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I mean, if you don't feel well where you're at, you should go somewhere else. And so for me, it was, I don't really feel well here. I'm getting hosed on taxes. I eventually kind of put the two together and realized, you know, how does that work if you move overseas? And so I started exploring. And eventually, you know, sold everything I had in the U.S., sold the last business, and decided to fully go where I was treated best. I've been kind of doing various things and researching and building a network and opening bank accounts and diversifying and what have you, but I decided to fully take the plunge. And so I started the website about 10 years ago, 11 years ago almost, to just write about it and share the experience. And I think it's been obviously, you know, I hope a lot of people have you know, found it inspiring, as we're now seeing more Americans than ever coming here to Portugal, going to Mexico, going all over the place. You never would have seen that. You never would have expected it.
Right. No, even 3 years ago, right? You wouldn't have expected that.
I was saying when Trump was running in 2016, why is it everyone always threatens to move to Canada? Because I think people, the media, the news media, you know, TV, movies, whatever, they're just like, oh, what was her name in Sex and the City? I'm moving to Paris. Okay, how? Yeah. You just show up and we've been waiting for you. And I said, yeah, Canada's a lot harder to get into for the average person. Maybe not for a famous actor, but for the average person. Why don't people talk about going to Mexico?
Right.
And lo and behold, Canada's become like an authoritarian cesspool. And Mexico is a great place. It's a vibrant place. We're having our conference there. I think, you know, people have discovered Mexico is worth talking about. You never would have expected that.
Let's dwell on that for a moment. Before we move on, that Canada has become an authoritarian cesspool. this is my first soundbite, I think, from this episode. You're referring to the freezing of bank accounts of people who supported the truckers, the vaccine mandates, the no-fly lists. What are you talking about?
So I'm no longer a U.S. citizen. I try not to be involved in U.S. politics other than sharing my thoughts on taxes and things like that that impact our audience. I've never been a Canadian citizen. I'm not going to comment necessarily on the minutia, but the general direction is, yeah, your money isn't yours. We're going to be in control. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. There's just fewer freedoms in general. And look at the United States, by the way. It's the exact same thing. And it's on both sides now. You have people in the United States who are saying Roe v. Wade, like, what are you talking about? We're getting rid of Roe v. Wade. And you have people on the other side who are talking about issues on the right. Nobody's happy.
Right.
And maybe in Canada more it's the left that's happy than the right, but nobody's happy. Right. And you're seeing people that the veneer is cracking of what I call the legacy brand countries. And when everybody says, look at all the Salvadorians who want to come here. I have a lot of respect for what those people are doing, and I understand that there's a certain necessity created by the countries that they're coming to, like the United States, of why they have so many problems in their own country. But the fact that someone who can't, you know, is escaping violence and trying to eke out a living is coming to the United States or coming to Canada, that doesn't prove the point that these countries are better. It proves that they still have some economic firepower. But in every other metric, they're doing very badly. And we've seen so many Canadians calling. It's been incredible.
Yeah. You mentioned, obviously, part of your origin story is that your father said, son, go where you're treated best, and that stuck with you. Two questions related to that. Mm. Number one, did your father act on that ever, or did he stay where he was treated just okay?
Yeah, so he's been on our channel. We have the Nomad Dad, right? And people love the Nomad Dad. He was a guy, I mean, I think you understand this probably better than a lot of people. Was a very honorable guy, very loyal guy. Felt like, you know, am I going to do this to my family? We're going to pack up. He wanted to go to New Zealand. He wanted to go to Australia. He wanted to go to Chile. You know, some of those countries are starting to turn now, but he would have been right for, 25 years or so. And I think he thought it was too disruptive. And I think that he thought back then it was, you just move everything.
Right.
He literally called the place where he had kind of a business relationship with and said, I want to open this up down in New Zealand. And they're like, yeah, we don't do that. And, you know, today you can start a business online. You can have your banking in Singapore. You can live. I mean, you can be diversified. Back then it was just like, let's move everything from the U.S. to New Zealand. And that, I think that was a scarier prospect than dip a toe in here. Where's the best banking? Where's the best place to live? Like, diversify. Don't just go from one frying pan to the next. And so
the barriers are much lower now.
The barriers are much lower. But by the way, I mean, they are spending about half their time down in Mexico now. And
down Mexico way.
They're down in Mexico and they like it a lot.
Yeah. All right. Amazing. So the corollary to that question about, you know, your origin and your influences, your father obviously in part has been an influence. Do you have any other people you would mention as having had a strong influence on your thinking in business, in philosophy, maybe a favorite author, something like this?
It's an interesting question. I don't say that. I think this is actually a negative, that I haven't had enough influences over the years. I've largely done stuff alone. I haven't been in masterminds. I haven't had groups, as you can imagine, you know, running a business outside of the United States, where I'm at, you know, in Malaysia, you know, perhaps the Malaysian Chinese have businesses, not really the kind of circles that I'm able to run in, you know, in Georgia, what have you. Like, I'm, you know, in some of these places, I think I probably have the best business knowledge among most people, or you're not running the local circle. So I really haven't had a lot of influences. I've certainly looked at people outside of business and outside of our space for sure. I would never want to have influences in a space. I don't think that's a good idea. I think if you want to be better, you need to look at what's better. So I look at people like, I loved Bob Iger's book, for example, the former CEO of Disney. Great book. I'm sure we don't agree on everything, but very, you know, motivational guy. You know, I look at people like Tom Ford, look at media characters, you know, Glenn Beck, for example, in my very early years in the United States. I mean, so I look at kind of different people for helping to shape the way I communicate, which I think is very important in this business. I think this business could communicate a lot better. Especially being somewhat of a controversial industry, better, clear communication.
What are the communication mistakes that people in this business are making?
I don't think there's enough communication. I think it's very tepid. I think it's very diplomatic in many regards. I think people are looking for real. One of the other things my father said way back, if we were talking 15, 20 years ago, he said there's going to come a time when you're going to have some, like a wild man that's going to run, and they're going to become the president of the U.S. And I'm like, well, how? They want a politician. They want someone who's politically correct. They want someone who follows the protocol. There's going to come a time nobody will care.
Right. Right. He called it.
Yeah. And so you're in that era now.
Yeah.
People don't care. Now, you can look at a guy like Trump and say he's going too far with it. And you can say, listen, I don't agree with everything Trump says. People think I'm some right-wing guy, and that's hardly the case. But he's honest, or at least he seems honest. I mean, I think that he's honest in the sense he's a very moody and mercurial guy. He just says what comes to his mind. But people respect that because it's not calculated.
Yeah.
There's far too much calculation. And I think that there's forces, obviously, in this industry where people are trying to be very disingenuous in shutting down our CBI programs.
Do you think you and Trump, in that sense, being someone who speaks their mind, not being calculating, you have that in common?
Well, I don't know that I'm at the level that Trump is.
Okay, so there's a difference in degree, but not in kind necessarily.
Well, yeah, there's a difference in. I think that I have some filter, and again, I think that obviously being international softens some of the beliefs that a more, you know, a patriotic, let's call it, politician would have, right? So there's more nuance to my opinions just because of the nature of that we're in a very international space and you get to know people and you don't make the stereotypes that you might make as a politician. But I think people need to be more direct. For the longest time, people looked and they said, why would you want to sell this to Americans? That's the stupidest thing ever, right? And now it's like the number one market of all time.
Right.
And you look back and say, well, you know, maybe you had a point. Americans, that's the place to be. Americans, Canadians, that's my audience, right? And it was a very niche audience because everyone was in Dubai. First of all, I don't want to be in places like Dubai. I don't want to be in the free consultation racket. I don't think it serves the client,
yeah,
or the potential client, because they're not many of them never become clients. They just go around town getting 18 different free consultations and then they do nothing.
Right.
How is that serving anybody to let them do nothing?
Right.
And so I don't want to be there. But also I think that I'm not going to comment on all the you know, selling in some of those other markets. But for me, is a more Western-focused brand. People are tired of the spin. They're tired of diplomacy. They're tired of things being couched, especially people looking for this stuff. I'm not saying be a wild man and go out attacking people and hooting and hollering and doing all that stuff. I'm saying speak your mind, share what you think. You know, our benefit of what we do, I think, is we spent all these years building the network. So we're not really a service provider in the sense of we're not writing tax memos. We're the layer on top that consolidates things and gives people the holistic nature of it,
right.
Which I think is important, especially for a Westerner with tax considerations. It's just all, it's one-stop shopping. I just think that, you know, for that market, you just have to be more outspoken.
Yeah.
That's all I think.
People who don't know you like I do, don't know this about you, but you do an amazing Trump impersonation. You want to give it a shot?
I maybe we'll see it sometime.
Yeah.
We'll, I hope it comes out. We'll do a tease, like a morning radio show. We'll tease that'll come up at some point.
Andrew, over the last 10 years, you said almost 11, you've built what's arguably the most recognizable brand in investment migration. It goes beyond investment migration, of course, but
we're not just in, I mean, it's hard to line up, right?
I want to emphasize that, but you know, what am I going to say? Offshore,
global citizenship.
Okay, fine. You've built the most recognizable brand, arguably, in global citizenship, if we can call that a domain. You've close to 1 million social media followers, maybe it's more, which is an order of magnitude greater than anybody else in this space. What do you think it is about your work in particular that resonates with so many people?
I think it is the realness. I think it is, I mean, listen, I think it's having a savvy, you know, one of the things that I see around the internet, you know, the haters, let's talk about the haters. It's like, oh, they're just good at marketing. And people would say that about me. By the way, it was funny. I look back, we had haters before we ever asked for a dime from anybody. It was just a blog. Right. I was just building it up and sharing knowledge and just, you know, getting some credibility. And, you know, even back then, and I think that maybe that leads to some of the diplomacy and with certain people where it's just like they're afraid of what someone's going to say or what some politician's going to say. I'm not afraid of what some politician's going to say. All right. Believe me. But it certainly is being good at marketing and knowing what are the trends, how to turn things into trends. I mean, one of our most popular, I think it's the second most popular video, was what happens if Joe Biden gets elected. Mm. It did relatively well for, I don't know, some number of months leading up to the election.
And so you're saying being topical is one of them.
But then what happened was you're almost kind of foreshadowing because when I was in Belgrade, when it finally, after a couple of days, was called for Joe Biden, everyone started looking that up. And it just went viral and went nuts. Right. And so you want to be on top of what the trends are and what could be coming up. And again, that just speaks to getting out of the comfort zone and having an opinion. No one wants to watch what happens if Joe Biden wins and someone's like, "Hello, this is we're today." You gotta have an opinion.
Yeah,
and you can't be afraid of an opinion. And I don't think I'm a very opinionated person. And I'm sure to some people, I'm far too much on one side or something like that. I don't think that I'm the most, I don't think it's Trump. I don't think I'm Trump.
Right.
I don't think we go that far. I think there's a great nuance. People want an opinion and they want the directives, but you have to know like where the trend is going. You have to kind of foreshadow where the trend is going.
But I think also what sets you apart from most other people is that you live the life, right?
I suppose that's an element that there's an authenticity, yeah. Right? I don't necessarily like to, I don't talk about it very often, but yeah, I mean, if you're like selling a newsletter on how to live the offshore life and escape the, you know, what do they call it? The USSA or something. That's your pitch. Where's your office? Pompano Beach, Florida.
Right.
Hey, you know, I like, trust you a little bit less.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's an authenticity that people look at.
Yeah. You don't buy diet books from fat people, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's valuable. And I think a lot of people in the RCBI space have that story, right? And I think the other thing for me was, you know, you lived in China and you worked in China. I spent a lot of time in China in my early time overseas and I got to know somewhat about the culture. But that's a hard culture, I think, to do business in.
Yeah.
And so my thing was, even though I thought at the beginning of this, hey, maybe it's easier to sell to people in China, and I would have preferred to sell, the exoticism of selling to people in China would have been more interesting to me. I realized I know this market. Mm-hmm. I know the US. I know the Western market. And it turned out to be a great growth market.
And you had it to yourself for many years.
We did.
Now that's changing. How does that make you feel? People are coming now and all of a sudden they've discovered the market that you've been in all along.
I think that's the nature of business. I mean, you're going to be copied. I mean, you're going to have competition. I think people who follow it understand the authenticity and understand. I mean, we have, what, over 2,000 videos at this point on YouTube. We put out a new video every day. We've been doing them for a number of years. We have blog posts going back to 2012. Maybe those have been scrubbed, but 2013. So I think people realize that we were here and I've been talking about this. We've been saying the same message for many years. Listen, again, whether you like him or not, what caused people to like Trump? You go back to the 1980s, the Japanese, they're taking advantage of us very badly. And it's just the same. You may hate the message, but people go back and you look and you say, okay, maybe Trump, you know, believes in this. And it has a point.
One question I want to ask you that's a little bit off topic is, I don't know if you heard of the late psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who came up with the...
You're a much more well-read person than I am, in all honesty.
Oh, am I?
You're a very studious fellow.
I went to college.
That's yeah. That's, yeah. That hurts.
Well, you've heard of the concept of flow, maybe. Yeah. Flow states, right? Yeah. That's his. So that's just for the audience who doesn't, they might not know. A flow state is kind of a pleasant state during which you're fully immersed in what you're doing.
Right.
And that's often where people do their best work. When are you in a flow state?
For me, I think, and this is maybe where the marketing comes in. I think, I'm on it when I'm doing content. That's
videos.
What I enjoy.
Videos.
Content. I used to write blogs.
Right, but it's different, right? There's two very different types of content. So are you, which one is more close to the essence of who you are?
I think it's changed over time. When I was a kid, I always wanted to write. I wrote the book, Nomad Capitalist, on Amazon. I wrote it all myself.
Yeah.
We had someone help me edit it, but I wrote it all myself because it was a passion of mine since I was 7 years old to write a book.
Right.
I think it changed over time. I think I realized that the market was going towards video. Now everything's video. I mean, Instagram, Facebook, everything is video now. Nobody wants to read anything anymore. Ironically, I think that actually there are places where they do want to read. Like I think we look at Germans, for example, are much more likely to come from the website.
Yeah.
There's a great book, by the way, Surrounded by Idiots. We like to break people down into red, blue, yellow, and green.
Yeah.
And so people who are blue, who like lots of information.
Of those in Germany? Blues?
I think we've done a good job. Like in Europe, we've done very well with people who are more blue, who are more, they enjoy the process.
Right.
Right. And so they enjoy reading something rather than kind of hearing my style. It's a little
bit
meandering.
It's also a quicker way to absorb information than watching a video,
I think it's different. I think for me, talking things out and listening helps me absorb a lot faster. But I'm in flow doing the content. And I think that the message behind that is marketing and organic marketing and authentic marketing is important. And look, I mean, I think our biggest year was 20 million people reached across everything.
What does that mean, reached?
That's website sessions. That's unique YouTube viewers looked at a quarterly basis. I think we did some estimates on, you know, we did a few, you know, on Fox Business or something. You know, all right, that's 50,000 people.
Yeah.
We reached, I don't know, somewhere around 20 million people that year.
Right.
That's a result of doing marketing. And so how many of those folks, what I like to look at is, if you hold back, could you look the people that you are missing in the eye and say, hey, you never went where you were treated best, for example. You never accomplished the thing that I'm helping people with. If I genuinely believe in it, you're not going to get there because I chose to play small and not wanted to market,
right.
Not wanted to be a marketer, as people say. I'm proud of running a sales and marketing organization. Right, we don't sell people who shouldn't be sold. We have, quite frankly, I think we should be like the Lifetime Achievement Award, by the way, this industry, for all the people who come who can't become our client, who then go and filter their way through the rest of the business. I mean, I think there should be, you know,
yeah, so
some recognition.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
But you're super
selective about your clients.
Yeah, we're very selective.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that thinking. You obviously cast an enormously wide net.
It is, yeah.
Right?
But I don't know that we ever thought we're casting an enormously wide net.
No, but just
let's
virtue,
put this out.
By virtue of having such an enormous social media following.
I don't know that we ever said our goal is to have an enormous social media following.
No, but it's a consequence of the work that you've done, right? The value of the work.
People connected with and it worked, and so they're fine.
And so, of course, you're going to have to filter, right? Who you take on as clients.
Which is hard, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you do that?
We have an application process.
Yeah.
So people go through it. And I mean, one of the things we look for is people who just are unpleasant. So I've largely stepped back at this point from you know, doing stuff. I've spent years and years training people who are now in many respects better than I am. We have a network, as I said, of all the lawyers and accountants and all those people around the world. But it's a very unique business because it's not just RCBI, which passports best. I mean, we do about 6 different kinds of citizenship. Mm. You know, and we combine it with taxes, where you're leaving, where you're going. We work with a lot of U.S. citizens. We do some expatriation help. I mean, we do a lot of different diverse stuff. And so, yeah, we have to be selective. It's partially about, can we help the person? It's partially about, do we want to help the person, which is, you know, obviously, it was originally for me in that, like, I don't want to have people who are hooting and hollering either. And it's also about finances, because what we do in running a wide research organization, I mean, we spend a lot of money on research every year. We're getting back to putting people in planes going around the world. It's very unique. And so the cost to run that, it's a higher cost than just, you know, opening up an office and saying, hey, do you want to come and, you know, get tax advice, or do you want to come and get a passport? And so there's no Walmart version of that. And quite frankly, I don't think there should be a Walmart version of that, right? I mean, I don't know that a person who's a $60,000 a year digital nomad needs the same advice as someone who makes $1 million a year running an ad agency online.
Right, right. No, they don't. You're right. Of course.
And so I'm proud of that. I mean, obviously there are people who don't, who wish we had a service. That's why we rolled out the event, by the way. Nomad Capitalist Live. Anyone can come. That is, I call it the Prada keychain.
Yeah.
Right? Remember like 25 years ago, I think it was Prada or Louis Vuitton, whatever, they started selling keychains for 300 euros so that anyone who couldn't afford a bag could still come to the store and they could capture that customer and the customer could feel like part of the process. And so that's what we did with that. But yeah, we don't work with a lot of folks. It's not like we get rid of people on purpose. One of the things I look at in other parts of our space, you know, I'll call private banks, either myself or the team has called them to send clients. It's like, oh, do you have $5 million? Yeah. Yeah, all right, leave us alone. Or they get back to you in a week. I think it was Counts Bank in the UK. You fill out their online form. Do you have £3 million? Okay. And then it's like, look, we endeavor to get back to you within 5 to 7 days. If I got £3 million to put in your bank, I ain't waiting 5 to 7 right, days. Right. And so I think that you don't want to be selective, but you want to have the best service.
We touched briefly on how the American market has become very big in the last couple of years, right? I think it started around COVID. It was a combination of Americans finding out, oh, my passport's not all that.
It was like Rwanda at one point, basically. It was the same level as Rwanda.
Yeah, in terms of visa-free travel.
Yeah. Right?
So partly was that was the impetus for the American awakening to investment migration possibilities. So the reduction in visa-free travel, but then you also had the specter of higher taxes under Biden. Then you had high crypto prices. Oh, but right. the loss of freedoms has been kind of a gradual thing over many, many years, right? It wasn't a one-time
thing. But people say like, oh, I'll leave when things get bad enough. It's like, if you've been watching things this century, I mean, they've gotten a lot worse.
Yeah, but it's the whole boiling frog thing, right?
That's exactly.
Yeah. So turn up the heat just a little bit every year.
That's why I focused again on, by the way, speaking of a successful clientele. All right, fine. Listen, you don't want to move. You don't want to do what I'm doing.
Oh.
Obviously, I'm slowing down a little bit from just perpetual nomad, 30 different countries a year, to being more settled living in my own properties. But okay, fine. You don't want to even live overseas at all. Hey, all right, get this passport, get this bank account, get this trust, you know, do whatever it is that you should do.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a good way to introduce Westerners to, all right, just dip a toe in.
Yeah.
And some people will take it further and some people will just stop at having a passport under their belt and all right, okay, I feel good now.
But okay, a lot of those push factors that came to a head in 2020, like COVID, like the election of a lefty, those factors are not as present anymore.
Right.
So do you think that this rise in interest among Americans was a flash in the pan, or is it something more permanent that's going to stay?
I think anything like that has some flash in the pan nature to it. I mean, it reaches a boiling point and then it cools off. But I think you have people who are very aware of this. Mm. Certainly crypto interest is down. We've seen resurgent interest from folks who are just like, yeah, I want to save on taxes. The dust is settled.
Right.
They now feel free to travel. We have people who, like, they didn't want to travel during the pandemic. We had a great friend of mine in Canada. He said, I'm not leaving until the pandemic's over, but I would love to go and lower my taxes. But I don't want to, like, be involved in the circus and
right.
get sick, whatever. And so I think that the genie's out of the bottle for those people. Some of the crypto folks maybe need to regroup and come back a little bit later. But I think the genie's out of the bottle. And so what's happened, though, is the easy money that happens, you know, early in any kind of, you know, flash in the pan like that, I think is over. You have to fight more. I think it's a point to be diversified, right? If all you do is serve crypto people and all you do is sell them passports, I mean, we've had to clean up some of the messes from some of those kind of folks where it's like, oh, only St. Lucia has this one. It's like, nah, that's not true.
Right.
And that's where the holistic, or, oh, if don't worry, get this passport and your American taxes are solved. I mean, there's some really bad advice going on out there from people who just want to sell passports.
Right.
And I think that those folks are going to get washed out.
You're also talking about diversifying your own offering. Where do you think that the best opportunities for, say, horizontal integration are for people who are in investment migration? Is it moving into also offering solutions around trusts, or as we spoke with Benjamin Ludmell about last week, asset protection? Where do you see the most overlap?
Well, it's a very difficult business what we run. It is intense. It is looking at our growth over the last couple of years, I look back and say, how do we do that while maintaining the accuracy, while increasing, you know, satisfaction? 2021, I mean, first year, 99% plus.
Yeah, because you, in your line of work, you can't move fast and break things, right? You can move fast, but you mustn't break.
We do move fast. We do move very fast. Oh, we've moved incredibly fast, but obviously you have to be careful and you have to be, and that's why, I mean, it's been years training people and because everything we do is from the ground up.
Yeah.
Right. So I can't just go and say, hey, I'm going to hire a bunch of RCBI people.
Right.
Because it's like, okay, do you know tax? Do you know this? Do you know that? And so you have to really bring in people who can, you know, can develop that, and maybe they have the credentials. But
and you also don't want to bring in people who are maybe too set in their ways and bring bad habits with
absolutely. And one of the things that we see is people say, "Yeah, I live in Australia, or I live in Canada, or I live in wherever." I talk to my accountant about, "Yeah, what if I move my business, and what if I move to Dubai?" And they're like, "Ah, you can't really do that. That doesn't work." I mean, there's so much advice that's just bad. I mean, there's so much advice that you can't do that. And people are like, no, of course I can do that. What are you talking about? Yeah. And so they'll come to us. From my perspective is very simple. The stuff doesn't work in a vacuum,
right?
I mean, nobody has an itch for an Antigua passport.
Right. In particular.
Why are you trying to do that?
Right.
Right. And people get so caught up in the pageantry of which beach they want to go to. And like they get caught up in the shiny object, both the purveyors in this industry, but also the customers. I'm just opposed to that. But yet I don't know that a lot of people would want to run the incredibly, I mean, it's incredibly difficult, honestly.
Yeah.
And how we've grown, we've kind of taken this opportunity this year to be a bit more, a little bit slower growth.
Mm.
Compared to the whirlwind years of the last, you know, 2 years, and really kind of dial some of that stuff in to be a little bit less hectic.
Yeah.
Because helping people from, I don't know how many different dozens of countries last year, go to dozens of countries and maintaining all the vendor relationships and maintaining all that, and having it all come up pretty well in the end. That's a challenge. In a sense, I can see why it's easier just to say, hey, come in for your free consultation. But my advice is to not offer free consultations.
Yeah, but I suppose people feel they need to do that just to get any business, just to get started, right?
Yeah.
But well, you're a marketing first guy.
No. Well, I started in business because I didn't know anybody. I had a good, you know, background growing up, but I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any startup capital. I just started cold calling people. My very first business, I was in the broadcasting industry, and I just started cold calling people. And I think that's somewhat lacking today in the business. Now, it's harder to cold call consumers these days.
Oh.
And I wasn't doing that even back then. But I think that here's the sales tip I would give you. There's a great sales trainer, and he would say, imagine you want to have a great relationship. You want to get married, right? And so you want to have like a strong relationship, but you're not confident you can get married yet. So what you're going to go out is you're going to go out in the marketplace, and you're going to have a lot of cheap relationships so that the word gets out, right? I'm gonna have free consultations. I'm gonna serve. Let the word get out, right? I'm gonna have a bunch of cheap relationships so that the word gets out in the marketplace, and then I'm gonna find my everlasting, properly valued relationship. It doesn't work that way,
no.
Right? I mean, if you now, there's probably a lot of people who yeah, they should be giving free consultations because they don't know what they're doing, right? Like, only St. Lucia has this one or that one, or only this one has this.
Yeah.
It's not true. So yeah, maybe you should be giving free consultations because your advice is worth less than zero. But
so
if you know what you're doing,
not giving any
stop.
Consultation at all.
Right, yeah, they should. The
it's
best
got,
service
it's got negative
be no
value to the client.
Negative. Yeah, they should pay you.
Yeah, to give you advice.
Yeah,
yeah. Look, Andrew, you're a man. Who has a life that's too big for any single country or even any single continent. You own a number of homes around the world. We don't have to, I mean, unless you want to, I don't need to reveal where you have your homes. I'm sure people will come.
Yeah, there's no great secrets.
They'll come look you up. Okay.
Just watch 2,000 videos. You'll figure it out.
All right. So we're talking Kuala Lumpur, Medellin,
Kuala Lumpur, Bogota, and then
Bogota,
in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, Belgrade, Tbilisi,
Montenegro, Georgia, and Turkey,
Istanbul. And Istanbul,
yeah.
Right? So, you spend considerable time in each of them.
Many of them, but not all of them.
Not all of them. Some more than others. But how do you pick where to locate these bases that you have? I mean, for me, important factors are things like, okay, lifestyle, weather, cost of living, taxes. What are the elements of the place that you emphasize?
There should be some, in general, there should be some RCBI element, whether it's a direct RCBI or whether it helps something else I'm doing with RCBI, what have you. I mean, we have business. We have three offices, three main offices with back office in Belgrade, Tbilisi, and Yerevan.
Yeah.
My wife's second home was Tbilisi.
Mm.
I have a lot of friends there. So it's friends, it's business, it's RCBI friendly. Most of them are tax friendly. Even Bogota, if you're not there, it's a pretty simplified tax code. We'll see. I think that'll continue under the current guide.
Yeah.
I think it'll be worse if you're in the system, but I don't think the system will suck more people in. Is my initial thought.
Okay.
And I think that people are maybe overblowing how bad he's going to be. Let's see. Maybe I'm wrong. But Colombia was a great RCBI play. I guess they're getting rid of that program. But it was
I wasn't aware.
They're gonna it's just straight real estate. I think it's gonna be a longer drawn out process.
Okay.
But for me, in Latin America, if I had to remove one third of the world, that's probably where it would be. Just coming from the U.S., it's a little bit too similar. And so it was Mexico City versus Bogota.
Mm-hmm.
Buenos Aires, I guess, is equal, but it's too far away. And so those are the two choices.
Yeah.
Colombia is an RCBI program, and I'll do it.
Right.
Mexico, I guess, is a program, but it's more focused on spending time there. So that was the choice. Eastern Europe is just a place I've had a lot of business, personal, social connections for the years. Kuala Lumpur was kind of my first base. They're mostly tax-friendly, RCBI-friendly places. I'll tell you the place I'm looking at now. I've loved it for many years. I've loved spending time in Ireland. I think it's an underrated RCBI destination. I get a lot of people that I talk to are like, but the weather's terrible.
It was unclear when you said Ireland.
Ireland. I think Ireland is a place that really deserves to get a lot more attention, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got a favorable tax system for many people. It's not as favorable for citizenship.
But their non-dom is practically the same as in the UK, right?
I think they follow the UK in some of the stuff, and there's some areas where the UK is also nebulous, like certain crypto stuff. But I think it's more flexible.
Okay.
And the UK being much more difficult to get into these days. I think Ireland has numerous different routes, both mm-hmm. investment based and just hey, I'm running a business, or hey, I'm retired with some money. I think there's numerous ways to get in there. The citizenship is harder, but if you're someone who's native English,
yeah,
it's a softer landing for a lot of folks.
Sure.
I think a lot of people who are new to this, the Americans, for example, the Canadians who are stepping out, you know. For me, Malaysia is pretty reasonable. People are very nice, but it's far away. It's a lot of problems. So I think that Mexico is much the same culture as the U.S., but Ireland is much the same. It's the same language essentially. Mm. And so I think it's not talked about enough as a soft landing for folks who speak English.
Yeah,
it's more expensive, but obviously with the Schengen opt out and the non-dom program and the fact that the passport is perhaps the best in the EU, maybe it's worth it.
You're saying it's perhaps the best in the EU because it's part of the common travel area in addition to being EU?
Yeah, I think that's a benefit for a lot of people, especially seeing that the UK is so difficult these days.
Yeah, sure. No, I agree. Ireland is a...
And by the way, it's so neutral. I look at Ireland. Okay, they hopped on with the global minimum tax, but I mean, look at the one country that didn't, Hungary. They're getting pummeled by the US with the taxes, with the visa-free for like all my Serbian friends who may have Hungarian ancestry. They're now lumped in with a bunch of criminals. They can't even get a visa waiver. So, I mean... You know, Ireland's one of the more, I think, tax-friendly, like they believe in that as a place. It's a smaller country, which I like. I mean, so I think there's a lot of benefits to it, not just the CTA.
Right. Talking about European countries and tax benefits, a lot of people find Europe romantic as a destination.
Yeah.
The problem is the high taxes. For me, that's the case.
People talk about the culture. You don't understand. We have so much culture here.
I don't talk about that. I like the lifestyle. I like the lifestyle. I find it charming.
Yeah.
Also, it's very lefty and it's very, you know, it's becoming antiquated and I get all that. No place.
There's a lot more competition for sure.
More competition.
Well, I mean, in a sense, this is what I call a legacy brand, right? Why are you drinking a Coca-Cola and not an RC Cola?
Right.
Because you know Coca-Cola. It's been put in your mind for your entire life.
Yeah.
Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia has not been put in your mind. Most people couldn't even fight. I remember I had someone who came to work for us many, many years ago. And their grandparents were like looking with like a magnifying glass on the map, like, where's Malaysia, right? And so you've heard of these, like, how many people do RCBI to Canada or something? Like, just because, oh, I know Canada, that's the good one. The same way you go to the grocery store and there's 20 brands of ketchup and you buy Heinz.
Right.
The marketing is mediocre. That's why I loved Mikhail Saakashvili in Georgia. He's like, I'm going to run ads. Mm. And I'm going to like be like, we want your business in Georgia.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah, they did that very successfully.
But you have so much more competition at that point. So like 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, where else would you go?
Yeah.
But now, you get a lot of choices.
Sure. But what I wanted to ask about, so okay, I live in Europe because, you know, I have friends, I have family here. I want to be close to them.
And nobody likes me, so I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Well, we're both misanthropes. To some extent, why not? But what I was going to ask you about that is, it is possible to live a low tax lifestyle in otherwise high tax European countries. Notably in Southern Europe, there's a number of them. You can do it with non-dom in Ireland, the UK. Can you highlight two or three of these special regimes that you think are particularly favorable? Worth taking a look at?
I think, I mean, obviously Portugal's is getting a lot of attention with the NHR. I think it's a little bit overblown because someone like me, who's already established offshore infrastructure, is going to have more things to change. I don't want to be changing a corporate structure. And quite frankly, you know what? If you said, again, look at Ireland, you're going to have to pay something. You're going to pay a lot more than the average person. I'm happy to pay it. But you know what I like? I don't want to have to go through collecting 80,000 documents.
Yeah.
Right? And so when you do the NHR, there's more restrictions, there's more work. I'd almost rather pay something and not have the work. Right. I think to pay 1, 2, 3, 5% on a big company, all right, fine. People would do that. They don't want the hassle. So Portugal, to me, if you make more than a couple million bucks, is worth it. Italy, I suppose, doesn't get enough love.
Lump sum.
Yeah, the lump sum in Italy. I guess Greece. I never really do much with Greece.
Right.
It's a bit more complicated lump sum. Switzerland, I think, is complicated and almost seems like very legacy. Like it's just, again, like back when there was no competition, I mean, the UK, if you have a way to get in, but I think Ireland, I mean, I think it's really a great program. I think that they're friendly.
Yeah.
I remember going to Ireland, with somebody well over a dozen years ago now, and they were a resident and they had to go like do something to renew their residence permit. We just walked in and coming from the US, you would just stop someone in the hallway and they would help you. The level of help you got there compared to the bureaucracy I see in other places in Europe and certainly where I'm from in the US was really just very down to earth and seemed very helpful. So I think the tax agency there is kind of the same way. I think it's a good one. Yeah, and by the way, I mean, for those who like Eastern Europe, I think Serbia and Montenegro have much more flexible systems where your companies don't get treated the same way they would in the EU. Georgia has a couple good regimes, so that's obviously further east. Armenia, if you're just starting out, you've got a small company, has a number of incentives.
Or even inside the EU, right? Romania, Bulgaria.
Romania just changed that, so now it was cut in half. Okay. We literally put out a video on that, like the day that they They cut it from, what is it, a million to, I think, was it 500 or 512 or something? So, yeah, I mean, if it, here's my thing. One of the things that I talk about saving tax is you don't just save the tax. Number one, you reinvest that money into the business, into whatever you want to reinvest it into. But there's a feeling of empowerment that, you know, you're no longer wasting your time looking for deductions and making that the focus of your business.
Right.
You're just all in and you're like, wait a second, I'm keeping 97% of this this juice.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to, great, all full speed ahead.
Yeah,
I think people could 4, 5, 6x their income besides just other factors of growing your business by moving offshore because you're so much more motivated. And so,
yeah, and just freeing up your mind.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, it's so inorganic.
Yeah.
People sit around. I had a guy once. And in a lot of countries, you're not even supposed to do this, right? I bought like, you know, a million tons of paper clips on December 29th. So, you know, it's like, you know, you're eventually you're going to have too many paper clips and you're not going to have this to do anymore.
Yeah.
And like, this is where you're devoting your effort is how to save money. It's like, no, how about how to make more money?
Yeah.
And I think that you'll do that when you move. By the way, why are immigrants in countries so much more successful in many cases? There's an intentionality to it, right? I don't know that like necessarily, oh, people from this country are better. No, there's an intentionality of they decided to be different. They decided to take a stand. They decided to go where they're treated best. They picked up stake. They had the courage to do it. Others won't.
Well, they're a self-selective group.
And they moved somewhere else.
They're a
self-selective group of people who are dedicated to success.
Right.
So there's the intentionality of that combined with the feelings of I'm keeping a lot more of my money. And you get rid of this dread that so many Westerners feel like, ah, what am I working for at some point?
Yeah.
50 cents on the dollar for what?
Right.
And now look at like in California, for example, even liberals like Bill Maher are talking about how it costs $800,000 to build a place for a homeless person to live. A homeless person, 800 grand.
Yeah.
And you think there's no waste, fraud, and abuse? And that, you know, just keep, he's like, I'm a liberal and I don't want to keep paying more taxes. It's enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Just before we end up, you're organizing Nomad Capitalist Live next month in Mexico City. You've got a star-studded lineup, I would say. It includes Doug Casey, Max Kaiser, Mark Moss, Adam Carolla, Nigel Farage.
Nigel Farage, yeah.
Yeah, Nigel Farage, wow. And a bunch of others. So I just wanted to give you a chance to pitch it, explain, you know, what's Nomad Capitalist Live for, who is it for, and what are should people get out of it? What should they expect to get out of it?
Well, I think networking is very important. One thing I see at all of our events is people like that. Finally, someone agrees with them. This is, I think, what we've tapped into perhaps at Nomad Capitalist is a certain sense of community and helping people. Like in business, for example, I love to read books from like, oh my God, I thought I was the only person who thought that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, that's what it's called?
Right.
Oh, that's fantastic. And then you end up building in that because you have that kind of solidarity. That's what we do at the event because people are out there. My friends think I'm a freak. My family is like, why are you going? Does that second pass? I don't understand.
Yeah.
And they come and you've got hundreds of people who are all like you.
Yeah.
And so it's 4 days of us sharing a lot of R&D. We do have the keynotes like Nigel Farage and the American comedian Adam Carolla, who's been harping on the whole California exit thing, and you know, the Bitcoin Max Kaiser. So you know, there's some entertainment,
there's
some great food, there's some great research, all the stuff that we're researching.
It's a great
this year.
Hotel,
good hotel, great at Polanco, Mexico City. It doesn't get any better than that, and you know. We don't do them in the U.S. People are, why don't you do it in the U.S.? Well, people in this industry will understand. We're hiring in places. I'm not looking to get, you know, 30 U.S. visas.
Right.
And you know, I'm probably not number one on their Christmas list myself.
Right.
But, you know, Mexico's treated us very well in most ways. You know, we get a tax incentive for hosting events there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we do. And so, you know, I think it's a great city. I want people to explore it.
Yeah.
And I want people to see, and I'm glad people are starting to see, you can run into trouble anywhere. But if you live, you know, a safe lifestyle, you know, I go to Mexico. I walk around at all hours of the day, Mexico City, Guadalajara, all over the place. I don't have any problems. I don't have problems. And I Bogota, same thing.
Yeah.
I want people to kind of get out of the media narrative of the West, because the Western media, I'm not too down this rabbit hole, but the Western media is very focused on, they got to keep people in.
Yeah. They got to maintain that legacy brand.
Legacy brand has to be maintained.
Yeah.
By the way, I was in Milan a couple months ago. Oh my goodness, what they're charging for hotels in Milan these days.
Right.
You know, 120 euros to be driven 1 kilometer.
Right.
Because the taxi drivers are on strike. And I say to myself, yeah, the people are fashionable. There's some okay food. I'm sorry. I don't entirely get it. And I'm thinking to myself, you can't find someplace in Eastern Europe that has the same 50% of the population being grouchy.
Right.
And the same, like, I don't get it. I don't get why I'm, like, I wanted to get it. Dublin? I get it. I love that. Now, listen, that's a personal choice. Some will disagree. All right, buy a 5 million euro house in Dublin, beautiful Georgian town, I'm in. Buy a 5 million euro apartment in Milan, and you go out, and I'm talking to my tailor who's from there. He's like, yeah, half the people are going to be salty all the time. I'm like, for what? What do I need this for? What do I need to pay this price when I can go somewhere else and live for a fraction of the cost?
Yeah.
With, you know, I mean, I don't understand it. And that's the whole point of the business. Nothing against Milan.
In particular, no.
No, but I just don't understand the value anymore when there's so many options.
Yeah.
And personally, I don't really care if people are, oh, he lives in Tbilisi, isn't there anybody? Listen, I'll be fine, right? This thing where people move, like all the digital nomads who move to Bali, because that's what all the other digital nomads are. Hmm. If you want to move to Bali, great. If you're doing it just to fit in, don't do it. Let me be the person to tell you, have some courage to go where, you know, maybe you actually want to go. And for me, that's what I've done.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people were going to Kuala Lumpur before I was talking about it. It was Bangkok. It was Singapore. And now it's doing very well. So I think the conference is about not only the conference itself, but helping to kind of shatter some of the expectations people have about some of these places and connect people with that.
All right. I think we're going to stop there. We'll go for lunch. Thank you so much, Andrew. It's been a pleasure.
It's always been a great honor. Thank you.
That's it for today, folks. But we'll be back soon with another episode of the Mobility Standard. In the meantime, I encourage you to check out our IMI Connect Istanbul event, where you'll meet not only Andrew Henderson himself, but a whole host of investment migration industry leaders in a unique setting in an Ottoman mansion on the Bosphorus waterfront, followed by a dinner cruise. I promise you, it'll be like no other event you've ever attended. So request your invitation today in the IMI events section. I hope to see you there. Thank you for listening.